Blog Talk Radio.
Prophecy Keepers Radio.
This is Jasagonie, Will Bluewater, a seventh great grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. OCO, Ginalii, this is Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Well, hello everybody, this is your old buddy Bluewater, and this is Prophecy Keeper show for the 17th of July, 2004. We're going to be talking about the Thunderbirds and the ramifications of the Thunderbirds in Native prophecy and their recent sightings. But we're coming to you from the mysterious Ozarks, Booger County in Mid-America, our guests today. And this week, and we'll be able to hear this on demand as long as the internet lasts and the rivers flow, I suppose. It's Dr. Robert Goswell. And before we introduce him, I just want to make the observation that we're going to be talking about a period of time, approximately 1889 to 90. I came to a realization here a few months ago that the same time when cowboys claimed that they shot down a Thunderbird in that same period of time, end of 1890, that was also the time that Wovoka and the two Arapahos, Short Bull and the two Arapahos, the three witnesses that all swore that Jesus visited them at Walker Lake. All this happened at the same time. And the old ancient Runa Mayan prophecy states that when the Thunderbird of the South shares its tears with the Eagles of the North, that Mother Earth would awaken. And the 1890 period was a focal point not only for Native prophecy, but also for Mormon prophecy, because Joseph Smith was told in the 1840s that if he lived to be 85, he'd see Jesus. So anyway, our guest is the Reverend Dr. Ghost Wolf. And how are you this evening, Robert?
I'm doing okay.
Good. So what do you have to say about all that?
One point that I have to make, and that Porcupine was Cheyenne.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Porcupine was Cheyenne. There were only, everyone else was Chihuahuan, and there was only one representative of the Northern tribes, and that was Porcupine from Cheyenne, and he was the actual apostle of the ghost dance that brought it to all the plains.
What about Short Bull?
Short Bull was with him. Short Bull was Arapaho, and he was like his assistant, so, sort of like when we get into the story of Donawita, and he had his assistant who was Hiawatha.
Right. Well, I know the...
So it was the two of them that brought the whole thing back about the ghost dance of the Plains Indians, and that's when the whole Messiah movement started.
Right. And things kind of got messed up because other things were invented and kind of injected.
Well, there was a lot of things, especially in the newspapers.
Well, that'll be true.
But people would be curious if they can go into the archives of the Boston Globe, okay? And in the Boston Globe, there are still the archives of the stories. It's not easy to find. You got to know how to dig. But there are still stories in there from that newspaper of that time talking about the ghost dance, including interviews with General Miles, okay? Who talked about the orange cloud that appeared and that this person seemed to walk down a stairway, but he couldn't have been Indian because he spoke all languages. But those stories, so that people know that this is real, this really happened.
That's interesting because Jesus is associated with the color orange. A lot of people that claim to see him in dreams or have visitations say that he's accompanied by the color orange and the smell of orange blossoms.
Right.
So what of the Thunderbird?
Well, I've been getting a lot of emails lately over the last year, phone calls with people calling me up saying, well, all they ever see up there is UFOs. How come they don't ever talk about those Thunderbirds? And, it's like when you start to hit 50, 60 phone calls and emails about it, I said, I'll talk to Blue Otter. Maybe we'll do a story about it. Because they're being seen more and more often now. Whatever they are, they're being heard, they're being felt. In my experience, you don't ever see the Wakinya, which is a Lakota word for the Thunderbird. You don't ever see them. They come in the storm clouds and they make that lightning sound. You know the difference. It's not rolling thunder, it's not thunder, it's like a clap. And when they clap, when that thunder clap comes, the whole earth shakes. I mean, literally, the ground shakes under you and your heart stops. I don't know of anyone personally who can say, yes, I saw one, okay? But I know a heck of a lot of people who've been in ceremony that can say, oh, they were there, okay? Because, like, the other thing is when they come, they bring that different kind of lightning, the blue lightning and the pink lightning and the green lightning, and the horizontal lightning that doesn't hit the earth, it just goes horizontal and lights up the whole sky, and the whole sky gets pink or blue or yellow or green. I know that years ago when we were doing the ceremonies up in Montana, and we were up there with people from all over, they were playing the drums, and I remember the Hopi turned around to me and said, maybe we're drumming too hard, because the lightning was coming right down to the drums. As they hit the drums, you could see a lightning sparks come out of the drum sticks. But are they or aren't they? And are they the dragons of old? Or are they these giant pterodactyl, like you just mentioned about the one that was found, the cowboys found in Arizona. And that's that story of the Tombstone Thunderbird. And, what they wound up showing in the pictures, I have that up on a website if people want to look at it.
I understand originally there was an actual photograph, but it was lost.
www.wolflodge.org. website, they'll see the number there. And they can hit the drum, and if they hit the drum, they'll go to the story and they'll see the whole article about it. But there's a picture there, and what they did was they superimposed like a blue heron. That was their Thunderbird, you know. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to say to that, because the blue heron is a very ancient bird, you know. And if anybody's ever been out there and seen them fly, they're a very strange energy. When they fly in slow motion.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't help but feel their presence. I mean, you know, they're just very strange energy. And when they fly, it's almost like time's warped. So, you know, I think that maybe some of the sightings of Thunderbirds may in fact be these large, very large blue herons, you know.
Let me read an email I got today. You know, you're talking about emails. I've never gotten one on the Native Prophecy Council group at Yahoo. A fellow by the name of Strong Eagle said that he was here with White Wolf in their refuge in Tennessee about 50, he says, just a few minutes ago, which would have been about noon, that's today. We saw something we don't know what it was or we're not sure about, and wondered if you might be able to help us figure out and understand, as we both know it was a given sign. Sitting outside talking, we both at the same time had our heads turned to see a huge white bird, completely white, except for a small black strip under the very front of its wings. It had red legs and was pretty far up, but was large or larger than an eagle. Circled for about 5 minutes, climbing higher and higher, and before we could get binoculars to see it better, it was gone. Not out and away, but down, just up. No clouds around either. Further thinks it was either a Thunderbird, according to what he's heard of them, or isn't sure. I know I've never seen one before. Can you please shed a little light on this, and what, if any, meaning it could hold for us? We come to you, brother, asking you because, you know, you have wisdom and knowledge of it. Wado for your time and peace of blessings to you as always. You know, I've seen water birds. You know, it might have been a whooping crane or, the, you know, there are big white cranes that do have some black on them. But what do you make of that report?
Well, I don't know about seeing, like I said, I don't know about seeing a physical Thunderbird, okay? I've not seen one. I've seen a giant blue heron that shook me up.
Mm-hmm, me too.
You know, I've been down in the Yucatan and seen, you know, the condors come, and they're tremendous. But, you know, they're not accompanied by the sound effects.
Mm-hmm.
What I can say is that, you know, the Hopi told us, the Hopi Sinna told us, that in the end times we would be witness to many strange occurrences, like animals from other times, and other animals that we knew would simply vanish. You know, some of them would get violent. I mean, even the rabbits would attack us while we were sitting out there.
Mm-hmm.
Strange things would happen with animals. And it would come about the time that the comets began to return. And, you know, what I can say is that these Thunderbirds and Thunderbird legend is very old. It's been spoken of by too many different people from too many different regions for there not to be an element of truth to it.
Mm-hmm.
As far as these strange animals appearing, I've seen reports of giant sloth in South America being seen, okay? And just too many reports about these Thunderbirds. I mean, not everybody is into the Thunderbird myth. Most people are stuck into UFOs, and, you know, maybe the UFOs they're seeing are not what they think they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But the Thunderbird and the reappearance in so many instances, I mean, like the letter that you just read, that was, I've got so many letters like that about people seeing these Thunderbirds that I said, well, you know, you can't just ignore it anymore. I witnessed the Wakinya, the lightning people, at ceremonies many times. But I have seen, okay, I'm going to step out. I've seen them twice. Once was when we did the ghost dance up in Montana, first one. And this big black thing came flying through the clouds. It was like, the wind was tremendous. It was like a straight line tornado. There was like 1,200 people up there. And we just saw this black thing, but it was moving. It wasn't a black UFO. This was a giant, whatever it was. And we could feel it, and as the wings flapped, you could hear that clap, and you could feel that clap. Like, it's very distinctive. It's not a rolling thunder sound, or it's not your typical lightning and thunder sound. This is a definite clap, like a flap of a giant wing. Another time that I saw them was when I was doing ceremony in New Mexico with the Yaqui. And that time, I think that was a Thunderbird. I mean, I definitely think that was a Thunderbird. And, so, what does it mean? It means maybe that you're privileged to see these energies from the grandfathers, you know, because this Thunderbird energy, the Wakinyan energy, is very ancient. It's a primordial force. There are stories, too, that the Thunderbirds are shapeshifters, that they can take human form. I've heard those stories, and I have some articles up there about that.
Well, you know about
the Hayoka, the Hayoka Society, the Hayoka medicine men of the Sioux, whether they be Lakota, Nakota, Dakota, Lakanju, the Hayoka medicine is closely associated to the Wakinian or Thunderbird medicine. And when they do their medicine and they do their lodges, there's usually always some sort of an acknowledgement. I've seen it where there's not a cloud in the sky, and you'll hear that thunder.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a very, very ancient thing, and I think that what it signifies is that maybe you've been given a window to feel the energy of the grandfathers so that you'll believe.
Well, the Adawes of the Cherokee, understand there was two early schisms in Cherokee religion. You know, one was those that believed in Creator alone, and then there was those that believed in Creator and the Adawes. And the Adawes were giant winged humans.
Oh.
And back in 96.
Just like what Kim Carey talks about in The Return of the Bird Tribes?
Suppose so. Betty, my wife, who has a direct female line back to her clan, and her grandmother was a Cherokee granny woman, herbalist. She had a dream once, and at that point we didn't know what it meant, and we were at the home of a Bear Clan Diné Navajo man who he had been a Native American church minister and then became a Christian minister, and the Christians ran him out. So Alan Neskai was his name, and he's walked west now. But Betty told him that she dreamt that she was standing on the edge of a mesa, because he lived right at the edge of a mesa at Cortez, Colorado, and she said that she saw these wings. She thought they were birds. And there was about 12 of them. And as they got closer, she realized that they were humans with bird wings. And he, a Navajo, you know, knew about the Adawes and knew we were Cherokee. So that's, you know, that's always stuck with Betty, that she's seen the Adawes. And so to this day, the protectors of the Cherokee religion are called Adawehees.
Prophecy keeper,
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
And during that same period of time, as a matter of fact, it was on the 4th of May, 1996, my son Joseph and I were up on the roof of a mobile home 22 miles south of Moab, Utah, which is only about 60, 70 miles north of the Navajo Reservation in Utah. And we were changing out evaporative cooler pads on the roof. It was a very, very windy day. And, we were caretaking 300 acres for a mining company, and you might get a car by there every 15 minutes. But anyway, I just, for some reason, I got this idea. I look up, it's kind of like what Spirit works with sometimes. Like that time I came home one night, normally I'll look at the North Star and pray. Well, this one night, the little voice said, "You ought to turn around and look south." And I saw this huge flying wing coming over me, But anyway, that day, and it turned out to be the day before the two Navajo deities appeared at Rocky Ridge. That day, my son and I both looked up, and we looked up in awe and amazement at a perfectly formed eagle, white on white, if you know what I mean. But it had absolute detail, absolute. It was a cloud eagle. The wingspan, the cloud was about 5,000-10,000 feet up, had a wingspan of at least 2 miles, but you could see every detail. You could see how the eagles kind of have a mane, but you could actually see every detail, all the feathers, the leading edge of the feathers. It was headed into the wind. It was pointed directly toward Four Corners, and we only lived at that point about 80 miles from Four Corners. And this apparition was visible for, maybe 30 seconds, and then the wind blew it apart. But boy, I sure wish I had a camera, because I cannot explain to you the absolute detail this thing had. You could make out the eyes, the beak, the nostrils, the little feet tucked up underneath it. Only everything was white, and shades of white and gray. So anyway, recently, there is a native symbol, not quite as famous as the white buffalo, but it's known as the white eagle, and persons
that's
that
in the old legends.
Right. I have a friend who traveled to Canada not long ago, and he was told to give a message to a couple of people, but he was told that one of them had been given the mantle of the white buffalo, and he said that he looked at the other one. He says you had been given the mantle of the white eagle because you have the ability to, from your vantage point, to see things clearly from a past, present, and future. So I guess, you know, and that's what I'm doing with this show. That's what I've done with the Native Prophecy websites. And
when I was a young buck, so to speak, and I was being, you know, all the stories were being shared because you were learning.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't realize how fortunate that time is because later on everyone expects you to know it.
Mm-hmm.
But like when you're in that learning stage, they just share the stories and the stories just flow out of them like water.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Grandpa used to talk about the white eagle and that in order to go from this world to that next world, you had to go through the white eagle. There was no other way. And the white eagle was like the guardian of the spirit world. Grandpa was a Hayoko. He used to lodge with John Lane there, you know, the old guys. Really scared you when they just looked at you.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, really, I remember John Landier had eyes like a black shark. He would look at you. I don't care how puffed up you were, you would just want to piss in your pants. Just like, oh, man. You know, and you can never tell. You know, you can never tell if he was going to give you a compliment or tear you apart, you know.
Oh, yeah. Another guy branded as a fraud. Oh, yeah.
Right. Now, John Landier as a fraud?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Screw those people.
Yep.
The thing was that you have to go through that white eagle. There's no way to the next world unless you go through the white eagle. There are different positions, you know. Unfortunately, we forgot because these stories, it's so important that these stories and the teaching goes on so that people would remember what old guys like me are talking about when I'm talking about that white eagle and going through that kind of stuff and understanding these teachings that even though they were told in different ways by different people, the Cherokee would have one way of telling the story and the Haudenosaunee would have another way of telling the story and Shoshone people would have another way of telling the story and, you know, Apaches had their way of telling the story. The thing was, all the stories were similar. And, you know, they all had that story of that white eagle. And then you had, that was the guardian of the door between this dream and the next dream.
Hmm.
The white eagle is the Thunderbird.
Hmm. I figure.
People think Thunderbird is a neon sign on top of a motel.
Or a belt buckle.
Yeah. You know? And isn't it funny how when you see all of those neon signs of the Thunderbird in the Southwest, go and try to find the stories of the Thunderbird legends amongst the Southwest people. They're almost non-existent. I know that the legend originated with the Northwest, the Athabascan people, so they say. But I don't know if it came at the same time, because there are equally as many stories amongst the Delaware, amongst the Haudenosaunee, amongst the Cherokee, huh? I mean, I know you've heard them
since mm-hmm.
childhood. I have. Very hard to find these old legends that explain things. You know, up on the site, I have a story by the Kuliyut. They're a Chimakoan tribe from the Olympic Peninsula. The symbol up there along the northwest for the Thunderbird, because they have their own unique style of art, there's a two-headed eagle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, isn't that funny? Because how many of the royal family that claim heritage, you know, when you read things by Sir Lawrence Gardner and what, going back to the ancient family and DNA ties and the royal family, theirs is a two-headed griffin.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, didn't the Russians have a two-headed eagle?
Similarities always, you know, they're there. You know, and then, of course, you know, we can go to the Norse legends. The Norse people, you know, the people who believe in Odin, you know, the Vikings. And their legend of the Thunderbirds is connected to the Valkyries, who were these mythical female warriors, you know, you could say they were divine Amazons, that flew on these flying horses, or actually dragons.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And the dragons, when they would flap their wings, would cause the thunderbolts to roll, and they would see the lights in the heaven. Well, the story's the same story as the Wakenyan, you know?
This is a familiar old music for Apocalypse Now. Dun, 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 dun. That's the Valkyrie.
Yeah. So, you know, the amazing thing is that the farther back we go, the more we see this Thunderbird legend connecting to all these different cultures, you know. But then, that's my weird thing, is I love trying to understand what the old people were really saying. Because I know that so many times, you know, the elders, they didn't read newspapers, they didn't go to Harvard. They saw pictures. So when they were talking, they explained what they saw. They didn't, you know, have all these words and everything that we have now to attach to things. They just said, we saw the Thunderbird, he was up there. It was this big shadow. You know, sometimes it was in color, sometimes it was a white one, sometimes it was a pink one, sometimes it was a green one, sometimes it was a black one. You know, I know I've heard stories from the Navajos where in the old times, when the Thunder people would come, first you'd have that weird lightning storm, very black clouds, but the kind of black clouds that are broken up by a blue sky,
mm-hmm.
not just like a rain storm cloud that you can't see anything, you could see the definition of clouds. But when they would come, they would know that they were there because sheep and goats would disappear.
Mm-hmm.
But that recently, what do we mean by recently? Well, let's say the last 40 years.
Well, a couple, 3 years ago in Alaska that were...
Yeah, they had all sorts of reports. I have that article up there. But in the Navajo world, what's been happening is that women, children, and old people disappear after the storm. There's just nowhere to be found.
Like Chief Dennis
Kamba. So you are winged humanoid beings that come down here and pick certain people, and they're just gone.
Mm.
There's a lot of... I think it's one of the most involved mysteries. Because, you know, people don't just talk about it. They don't just talk about it. It's like, after you know them for a while, they'll tell you the stories. Well, it'll take you to the place where you can see them. Like the place you were talking about in Cortez, Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
There's a ridge of mountains there. There's four places that I know they've been seen a lot. One of them is in Cortez. There's a ridge up there that they call Thunder Ridge. There's a place right here where I live that Pueblo people used to call Thunder Mountain. There's a place in... there's a place out there where they have dinosaur footprints,
mm-hmm.
and all these volcanoes, the Capilan volcanoes. And then there's a place down in, I think it's Arizona. The thing about all of these places is they're like mountainous, small mountainous regions that break up out of flat prairie. And when the winds come, when storms come, hung up in that area, that reason why they're called the Thunder Places or Thunder Mountain or Thunder Ridge is what we have from the southwest all the way up to the northwest is all these places where thunderstorms are born. You know, when we go into contemporary science and where storms are born and how they're formed, there are a lot of areas here that cause these thunderstorms to actually be created. That's a scientific explanation. The indigenous explanation has always been, this is a place of spirits, this is where the Lumber Beans come. Any one of these, Lordsburg, Arizona, this is the place. Whenever these Thunder Beings come, strange things happen, like people disappear.
Mm-hmm.
Science can't explain. They can't explain it. I have a lot of information up on that site regarding fossils, paleontology, and these giant birds that were very prominent here in the southwest and the northwest at one point, called Quetzalcoatlus Northropi. It was a giant, I think the term that most people would understand is pterodactyl type reptile.
Mm-hmm.
But this thing had wingspans of up to 40, 50, 60 feet. They were tremendous. They soared like eagles. They did flap wings like crows or ravens. And there's many fossilizations of those that have been found. The other thing that has been found is what they call, now understand that those are reptiles.
Mm-hmm.
So they have like reptile skin, right? No feathers, just reptile skin.
Like bat wings.
Then there are these other ones that they found, including, this is where so many numerous reports come in, of what they call a pteratron. The pteratron is a gigantic bird. If you took an eagle, the size of an eagle next to a pteratron would be like the size of a raven next to an eagle, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you were looking at it. And these birds have feathers. Now, they found these, they found the feathers in Illinois, they found them in Texas, they found them in Pennsylvania, it's all fuzzy. And these feathers are like 5 to 6 feet long.
Jeez.
So if they're feathers and the scientists found them, well, that means that they're not fossil, they're feathers, right?
Hmm.
So they can't be that old.
Might have been missing link between reptile and bird.
Yeah. All I know the science tells us that the first feathered birds, that type of animal, they were small, or they were walking birds like ostriches and things, but these things flew, and they're called pterotrons.
Hmm.
Now, they're not the flying reptiles, they're huge, gigantic flying birds. And there's a lot of pictures in there on the website that I have on that, thefloods.org. And they have, I think it's a replica. I have not gone to the museum in Houston. The story is supposed to be, it's a pterotron, okay? But then I've seen a lot of stories in the Southwest at these freak shows that you stop at, you know,
mm-hmm.
the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just a very strange-looking humanoid creature. I could, I looked at it, unless I do a forensic, I couldn't tell you what this thing was, okay? Because the rib cage has got ribs as big as elk bones, okay?
Hmm.
And yet this being is only 5 foot something tall. It's got little tiny feet. And the skull is very weird. So I guess I have to go down to Houston. I don't like Houston. It's where they have mosquitoes the size of B-50s. understand that at the museum in Houston, they have the remains of one of these carriage runs of the tribes. There were, like I said, 5-6 people.
Seriously.
So that's a pretty big parakeet.
Big enough to eat you.
I just hope that one of them isn't flying over my head one day and decides to let loose.
Well, that one, you got a picture on your website, I guess, representation, you know, 35-foot wingspan. I mean, its bill was as big as you and me.
Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper.
On zero. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
Yeah?
You know, that means it's big enough to eat you.
And there's lots of petroglyphs that show not just typical Thunderbird symbols, but actual pictures of these Thunderbirds, okay? And I think that the part that most people are just now realizing is that these petroglyphs, well, that's the way the ancient peoples here kept their records. They were like documentary news reports.
Newspapers.
You know? And they have these pictures of these giant birds. I have some pictures of those up there, too.
Yeah, you know, amazing.
My thing is, okay, if it's a giant flying reptile, is it a dragon?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one day we should get into the dragon myths of the ancient Americans. You know, everybody thinks dragons are Chinese.
Well, the Amiwaku, who we'll be interviewing here in a couple of weeks, she, in her book, made the observation that the last dragon was sighted shortly before the white man arrived. And the dragon symbol can be found on the national seal of one of the, or the White River and Sac River Band, Chickamauga Cherokees. Chickamaugas still hold the dragon sacred. And Rolling Thunder described visiting a being that may very possibly have been a dragon. Described it as a serpent, but if you didn't see the whole body, but it could have been a dragon, because he said that in the caves of North Carolina, there was a place that you could go, and with the proper clearance, I suppose you have to be led there. But this
you could do it.
Mm-hmm. But you could go, and you could ask this being, you know, you could say, well, you know, I want to be lucky, or I want to help people, I want to be a medicine person, or, you know, whatever it was, whatever gift that you wanted, if you asked in a certain way, and then there was a little bit more to it, that was physical contact
between
you. Well,
you know, when we say ask in a certain way, we're talking about asking for the heart of a child.
Right. And
there's no agenda, there's just, like, curiosity.
Well, and then he described a certain manner of physical contact between you and this being. But once that was done, it was a done deal. And but anyway,
well, I'll tell you what. One day when I come down to you, I'm going to bring this little wooden box that I have. And inside this wooden box is this old leather pouch. And inside this leather pouch is something that was given to me when I was taken to see those beads in North Carolina.
Mm.
What I've got is a bag of dragon teeth.
Mm.
So nice. You have it, and they said, this is that you will always know that you're not crazy. And
yeah.
You could see what you saw.
I always figured.
And we do a cam shot.
I figured it was a dragon. I figured.
To see the picture. Did you see the picture on my website from the... during the Civil War with the blue coats,
mm-hmm.
where they're sitting with this giant thing that they shot down out of the sky.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the biggest turkey I ever seen.
Yeah, it's a big air type picture.
I mean, it's like falling apart, but it's an old U.S. military photo of these six guys standing by this gigantic pterodactyl type bird. Okay? I said, whoa.
Well, I know, you know, recent as the 50s, there was an account over in southern Illinois. See, the southern Illinois, Ozarks region, all the way to Pennsylvania, there have been sightings, and not too long ago. But the one in southern Illinois is kind of prairie-like. And some people said that they saw what they thought was a Piper Cub airplane until it started flapping its wings, you know. And, but these things have been seen... here in the Ozarks and in different places. This, the Mark Twain National Forest.
Well, from what I hear, they're all over your area.
Yeah, the Mark Twain, you know, the military, you know, they train the, you know, the stealth. Well, you know, Whiteman is not too far from here, and that's where B-1s are, the stealth bombers and the stealth bombers are out of. But at night, you know, you can go out. It's really funny, when I was living over in Van Buren, had a friend, he would always kind of know when something was going to happen. And generally he says, they're coming tonight. And we lived up at this mountaintop at about 900 feet elevation, and I'd say, okay. So about 9 o'clock, we'd get the lawn chairs, and we'd go out, and we'd just wait. Sure enough, we could hear. Here would come these yellow, look like yellow flares, and they just kind of hang in the sky, and then one or two of them, but they wouldn't descend like flares. They just looked like these burning flares that kind of had a glare around them. And here comes the fighter planes, you know, whooshing by. And then these yellow lights would just wink out, and they'd move 10 or 20 miles, you know, west, and they'd wink on again, and this would go on for an hour or two, cat and mouse. And then once I saw these two things, whatever they were, make a huge arc. Oh, they must have gone all the way to St. Louis. We were a couple hundred miles from St. Louis, and they swung up toward St. Louis and came back and hung in the sky.
Probably trying to teach those people in St. Louis respect.
Who knows? I don't know. But yeah, there's a lot of strange things go on in the Ozarks. Yeah, it's a wild region.
There's a lot of reports out of Illinois. I mean, there's a lot of documented reports. But again, you know, no one's ever photographed these things.
Mm-hmm.
you have is eyewitness reports, which is, you know, good enough for me, because I know some of the elders that they're going to tell you about, I know they don't buy.
Well, that's what they said in the newspapers a couple of years ago about the incidents in Alaska.
There was a lot of different stories about that one. They couldn't tell if it was this weird UFO or if it was one of the Thunderbirds. But I recall.
Yeah, they made the wire service.
One of those things that Richard Holden brought up with the Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
We found another curious ship from Mars. But all the native people said it was Thunderbird. It was seen in more areas than one. I think it was as big up there as the Phoenix Light. You know, it was that big an event. It was like too many people saw this. It wasn't just three people who were having a barbecue somewhere. There was like hundreds of people that reported this to the police. I like the one in Texas. That's the report from the Texas sheriff. You know?
I haven't heard about
that. This huge flying bird. And so what did they do? They sent F-17s out.
Uh-huh.
But by the time they got there, it was gone. Another place where these things are seen quite often, it's a very strange place. There's a place called, in Arizona, Whitcomb, Arizona. This is past Lordsburg as you're headed toward Tombstone. And that's the place with the mountain with a huge observatory on it.
Mm.
But they just had all these forest fires.
Yeah.
But anyway, the Vatican has built this like multi-billion dollar.
It's a binocular telescope. Yeah.
Okay.
Mount Graham. It's a binocular telescope.
Yeah. And that's a very old place, especially the Chiricahua. There's a lot of legends in there about Geronimo's gold. Always hidden places, but they're all owned now. They're all private places. You can't get near them.
How did the Vatican get on that mountain?
Why did they pick that place?
Yeah, well, you know, you're talking about Jesuits. Jesuits.
And they spent multi-billion dollars building this. What are they looking at?
Planet X.
The Vatican? Give me a break.
Well, they're looking at something.
Vatican doesn't believe in myth, right? I mean, every time we say that we talk to God, a God came down or an angel talked to us, or a spirit talked to us, they tell us that we're channeling, and that's heresy.
Well, the only myths they believe in are the ones they start, apparently.
Yeah, they don't talk about the ones, but I'll tell you something. I got some films of things in that area by some very credible people that I've worked with for years that did, like, UFOAZ, and now they're doing Cutting Edge TV. They're part of the Trilogy Network.
Mm-hmm.
And they show me their private films. And, you know, the thing I get with these people, I say, well, why don't you bring this stuff out? You know? I mean, these are incredible films. Of, you know, these lights coming from who knows where and doing all sorts of acrobatics. And then every time they send out, you know, the F-117s, you know, they're going to take them all down. And by the time these guys get there, these things just go, and they're gone. And the F-17s can't even keep up with them. There's no way that they can keep up with the speed these things are.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose it's like a lot of things that happened with Gillian up at the mountains up in Yakima. That's a very old place. You can't see it from the ground. But if you fly over in a plane, there's a mountain configuration that I swear to God looks just like a perfect carving of a chief's head wearing a war bonnet. I mean, it's all up there by that mountain up there. But again, you know, he's seeing all these UFOs. What I'm always interested in, because UFOs are interesting. Everybody always thinks they come from somewhere all the way up there. I think they come from here mostly. I don't think that the relationship between our peoples and whoever these peoples are. Is that strange? It's just, you know, now it's become like the new thing. And yet, in the indigenous stories, this is all very old. They have gold time. As a matter of fact, it used to happen a lot more frequently than it does now.
Well, I know people of the book, you know, the Christian, the Jew, the Muslim. I mean, they got to know. I mean, this is the time of the restoration of all things, spoken of by all the mouths of all the holy prophets. Were it's a parallel in the parallels in the Hopi prophecy that all the old medicine societies will be resurrected, all the old knowledge will be coming back. You know, some of it's got to do with science and archaeology and...
Well, a lot of that, when you're talking about, is Mayan.
Yeah. And some of it's
Mayan being... never lost their records.
Intuitive, and some of it's just being rediscovered.
But, you know, when you talk about the strange parallel, there is a strange parallel. And the parallel is that... From what I see, the lands of the Tigris and the Euphrates have always been known as the land of the reptiles, the land of the Anunnaki, who were reptile beings. Because most people are familiar with that. I'll show you some things that I found right here in Mexico that will blow your mind, because they're the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I showed them to Zachariah Sitchin, and I said, I want your opinion on this. Because, I mean, here were things right out of Sumerian ancient artifacts, ancient, you know, glyphs, and the writings are there, and here's this being with wings and the head of a lizard, and he's standing next to a queen, and there's a child, a young child, looks very much like a cherub. And Zachariah's comment was, this is out of my area of expertise.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to Zachariah, what in the heck is your area of expertise? If I told you that these came from Iraq, you would have all sorts of stories for me. But because I told you that they were found in a cave in Guatemala, you're going, excuse me, not Guatemala, they were found in Bolivia.
Mm-hmm.
That they were found in Bolivia, and they were made out of solid gold. Solid gold, okay? You familiar with the term bas-relief?
Mm-hmm.
It's like the thing you
did bas-relief.
All over the Parthenon in Greece.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is part of a bas-relief, but it was solid gold. It was covered under 3 inches of back guavo, okay? But when you took the back guavo off, it was solid gold. And I have the pictures of these things, and I have the... I mean, I couldn't take them with me. I wish I could take everything with me that I've seen and put it into some place. If we could find some safe house to put it in and call it, you know, Could This Be True Museum? And just put these things in, because these scientists, these academia knuckleheads, they don't have a clue. They do not have a clue as to how old the Americas are. They just don't have a clue. You know, they're so stuck. It's almost like the old Muslim belief that there was nothing in the world before 5,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So you couldn't say, well, the pyramids are older than that, or this is older than that, because it was against their organized, sanctified religion, okay? But the fact of the matter is, the pyramids at least 28,000 years old. You can tell by the way the erosion was on the rock. You can tell there were seas there. There's deposits from salt water at the bottom of where the Sphinx is. You know, when that's the age that we're moving into now is a very strange age in that we have developed over the last 15 to 10 years extensive information because of this weird thing called the internet in forensic science. And forensic science doesn't lie. It can't lie. It's like math. And so when you're looking at something like this freeze, we'll do a thing on that one. But like, you know, made out of solid gold, and this thing is dated to be at least 25,000 B.C. And here I'm looking at it, and it's found in Bolivia, and it would be the same thing that you would find in Iraq. And I'm going, what is this doing here? This is not supposed to be here, right?
Well, you know what Eric von Däniken said he found in Bolivia.
What was that?
Well, in his last book.
He's not as crazy as people think.
Oh, no, I can't remember what it was called, but you open, you know, it's no secret that I did a little stint in the Utah Mormon Church. But I was kind of, but it took me...
Cherokees get around.
Didn't take me long. Well, what's really interesting is that the Cherokees came to the fore, you know, in the Indian prophet movement, because the first footnoters of the Book of Mormon talk about a future Indian prophet that would be coming, and those things are taught by people that are mixed blood Cherokees.
Tell me your great secrets deep inside your heart.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide. And then we really will have something. And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
But von Däniken, you know, who is not a Mormon by any stretch of the imagination, I was in the Sedalia Missouri Public Library back in the mid-80s, and I can't remember the name of the book. I think it was the last one that he wrote, but you open up the front page, and there's a picture of the Salt Lake Temple. Then you open up you turn the page, picture of Joseph Smith, and then the entire book is about how he went and found the scaled-down version of Solomon's Temple, right where the Book of Mormon said it was, and that he got... he got the head of the military junta, to loan him his helicopter, and he got in there and found the thing. And it was shortly before, you know, some flooding came in and undermined the water courses and everything under the temple, which were, you know, identical to the ones in Jerusalem. But, yeah, it's kind of interesting. You know, a lot of people came and went. You know, there's several parties, apparently, that came from Jerusalem, including Zedekiah's son. Now, Zedekiah sent his cousin Jeremiah, the prophet, with... he sent Jeremiah to escort his daughters, Tamar, Tia Tefi, and Scotta, to Northern Ireland, but to sent the son, Mulek, over here and establish a colony. So, and he was the last de jure king of Israel. And so, you know, that blood definitely is over here, and some of those influences. But that's fairly recent, you know, compared to the more ancient things that he's talking Mayans and Toltecs and all that other kind of stuff. But I don't know how we got off on that.
Well,
but
you know, when we go down to Peru and we look at some of those ancient stones that they found,
yeah,
there are all these pictures on there, and they're beautifully rendered. I mean, they are perfect. I mean, it's high art, okay? It's like scrimshaw on rocks.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
There are these beautiful representations of humans with reptiles and reptiles with humans, these giant birds. And then it goes beyond that. It goes into showing how they had developed a very fine technique of surgery where they could
mm-hmm.
actually operate on cataracts on people's eyes.
Mm-hmm. Pre-planning, brain surgery.
They knew how to take brain tumors out of the human brain without drilling these gigantic holes in them. So, you know, what always amazes me, Roger, is that the farther back we go, the more we knew.
Oh, yeah.
And the closer we get to the things that contemporary science acknowledges are these primitive forms of healing and medicine that, like, they're Neanderthal by comparison to what we once knew. But I've seen these giant pictures of these giant birds, and I've seen these pictures on these Inca stones. They're beautifully rendered. I mean, they are absolutely precise. There's no way. How could they have created them? Okay? There's no way they could have created them. It had to come from their imagination.
Mm-hmm.
At least, if it came from their imagination, it means it had to come to something that was of common knowledge within the consciousness, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they had to be talking about it. And there are these renderings of, you know, these reptile beings having sex with earth girls. There are these renderings of children who were born between. You know, this is still, as Don Juan Matus said, who was a real being. This is still a land of many mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
The reality of this world is beyond what we comprehend. We keep trying to bend reality to our limited perception.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why things continue to happen that we cannot explain.
Those 10 toes on Nebuchadnezzar's statue, you know, it talked about the half of them were iron and the other were miry clay. You know,
well,
so,
well,
iron was.
You there?
Yeah.
I first learned the word Anunnaki from the Navajo when I was in Chaco Canyon.
Oh, that's scary.
You know, and I said, well, who are they? Who are these beings? Who are these beings that are being depicted as these giant beings? And it was the Navajo that said, they're the Anunnaki. Later on, I found out, you know, it was this European thing, and I got this whole thing in the Bible and everything else. Because when I used to come out with my stories back in my young days of naivety, I just recited things that I saw or experienced or the elders shared with me. And I didn't have that scientific, academic background to argue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like then I decided, okay, I've had enough of this, and I'm going to go learn their stuff. Well, that wasn't hard. It only took me about 3 years. And then I learned their stuff, you know, so now I'm Dr. Ghost Wolf. You know, but I'm still Ghost Wolf. I'm still the wolf. But now I know how to argue with them, with their own words. And that's what it is. It's an argument about words. And the fact of the matter is that when you're sitting there at a ceremony, and the sage is burning, and the pipe is being passed, and the Wakinians appear, you know what you saw. Then we have to go through all these years of re-educating ourselves to explain to the lesser people who don't believe what it was we saw.
Oh, yeah.
And then as we explain it, we have to find all of these different terminologies and words to refer back to what we knew 20 years ago, sitting on the mountain, looking up and going, what the hell was that? And Grandpa went, it was a Thunderbird.
Well, you know, what's really sad is that now, more than ever, there's so much information available, but there's so many people that claim to be native and say, oh, that's bull. And I won't say the rest of it, but they say it. You know, it's so sad that, and it was prophesied that the people would refuse to listen to their elders at this period of time, a lot of them would.
They're new age opportunities.
Yeah. And you get those that are blinded by, you know.
Well, you know, I got to stand back a little bit with that one because, you know, as a Mete, for years I was labeled a bunk bird. By the cowboys, I was labeled a breed. And then by the reservation Indians, I was labeled a fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like to go through all of that, and it's like, all I can go back and say is what fools trust. Indian is a matter of heart. It's a matter of how you feel things, not how you talking about things that comes out of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like, for all of our brothers out there who are okay, you know I'm an activist. We have yet to be recognized as a nation we truly are. Because in actuality, we make up the larger proportion of the American population. Everybody's got a Cherokee in a woodshed.
Well, you know, one of the Mete councils, there's two federally recognized councils in Canada, and they do extend, one of them does extend their jurisdiction, so to speak, to the entire Louisiana Purchase. So theoretically, they should be accepting anybody that came in contact with the French, and that would include the traditionalist Cherokees.
Huh?
The traditionalist Cherokees. You know, the Kituas, you know, they're the ones that had the French, a lot of them had French names. They came into the Louisiana Purchase area.
They also have Portuguese names.
Yeah, west of the Mississippi, you know, before 1800, then they ought to be accepting them in a membership also.
What about all those guys in Mexico with beards?
Well, Cherokees had beards. Ancient Cherokees had beards. Real light ones, but they had them.
A wolf got a beard.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm just going to say this. I was on Orcas Island. It's a little island off the coast of Washington. And there was a friend of mine there who had a little, like, meeting hall building, okay? And he used to record and play with a lot of the big rock stars. I mean, the big rock stars. He played with the Who, he played Eric Clapton, he played with all those people. And I came down and I said to him, I said, listen, I want to do a gathering. Because we had just saved the place from development. That was called Madrona Point. Now, Madrona Point is small. It's 30 acres. But it was a sacred place to the natives there. I mean, there are old medicine wheels and everything on this little 30 acres.
Mm.
Anyway, through a bunch of events and a lot of high drama, we saved it from the developers by a man called William Randolph Hearst. He came up with the money to buy it from the developers so that it would stay a park. Okay. So we decided that we were going to do this celebration. That just didn't happen too long ago. It was 1990, early 90s. And we decided we were going to do a little celebration. So I walk up to my friend and I say, hey, I want to do a drumming. Okay? So he couldn't figure out how I was sitting in there with these three giant drums. And just me and these three giant drums, and there was like 400 people there. Okay? In that drumming, there was more than one, but there was this particular fellow who was about 6 foot. He had sort of light brown hair, and I guess he would look like the kind of character that Hollywood would cast as an Indian, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because he was pretty, okay? He was model-like in stature. And he's standing over there, and I got off the stage. I was through after about 3 hours of drumming. And there's this fellow standing there, and he's crying. And I walk up to him, and I go, what's the matter? Are you okay? And he goes, he just looks at me, with this blank stare in his eyes. And he goes, I'm Cherokee. They've never let me be an Indian. And tonight I felt my soul. So when I see things like that, I don't listen to folk, because that's real. Tears are real. You know, that was his affidavit. And I've seen this time and time again. It's something that's played off for political reasons, and it's usually played by these sorrowful characters that live in god-awful conditions, who've never gone to a ceremony themselves, never sit down and seen the concoction was enter the Yippie Lodge, but they keep calling Sweat Lodge. There's no Sweat Lodge, it's European. Sweat Lodge is Norse. Sweat Lodge is Wooden House. Wooden House was Viking. You know. So I've seen that. But when you see, like, this one boy, you know, with tears in his eyes. And I've seen that countless times, and I know you must have seen that. You know, that's real. So, like, let's cut all the crap and just get down to the soul journey, because right now, everybody came from every place, and everybody's been something else, and we're in the end times. We're not in the it's coming, we're not in the it's near, or we're not in it could be like this, or let's look at Gordon Michael Scallion's map, or let's look at Lori Toy's map.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the Indians have a map that nobody's ever talked about. Because they didn't have the right press. The Indians have a map about the earth change. The native people here have always known the way this thing would happen, and the rivers would cross, and there would be a cross in the middle of the country, like four directions time, and that the place that would be come the new sacred place would be these white temples, the white pillars. And when you go and you look at this thing and if you were to put it down in a map, well, the white pillars become the Pahasepa. They become the place up in the Dakotas. And the Pahasepa, geophysically speaking, is the oldest geological formation in the Americas. All of the other parts of the Americas, we go to parts of the Carolinas, and we go to Newfoundland, and we go to California. They all have attributes in geology. They have the same stones as Africa, or the same stones as Ireland, or the same formation. The Pahasepa is very unique. There's nothing else like it. There's not anything else like it anywhere before. It's uniquely North American. It's the oldest geological formations in North America, next to Hudson's Bay. And, you know, I remember reading the Mormon book where they talked about the Paradise Land. And they talked about this place of many rivers and the confluences and all the geographical clues that would tell you where it was. And a lot of them believe that it was in the Yucatan area. You know, and they talked about how these giant beings could walk across the space of so many hours.
That's recent. That's the two hill Cumorah theory. That's only been about since the 1930s. It's right where they said it was.
So I'm looking up with the Finger Lakes.
Yeah, New York. New York is the only place, and the proof is that it cannot be the Yucatan area, because the Book of Mormon says that it's a difference between the sea dividing the land, or the waters dividing the land, or the land dividing the waters.
Right.
Down, it cannot be the Isthmus of Panama, because that's where land...
You also talked about these beings who could walk across that in a certain amount of hours.
Well, yeah.
They were these giant beings.
Well, they talked about walking from one place to another and it taking one day. Well, it can't be Panama, because you can't walk from point A to point A. Point A to point B down there would be 1,000 miles, but up here, where it described the Book of Mormon says that area where the Hill Cumorah is, where the records were, that's where the records were found, was a place where the waters divided the land, and not the reverse. And that area around the Finger Lakes and then north of that into Canada, there's literally thousands and thousands and thousands of lakes. It's a land of many waters.
There are also many, many, many megalithic structures in that area.
Right, and look at all the power.
Just like Stonehenge.
That's Quebec. I mean, the Quebecois own about a third of all the hydroelectric power in North America. That's that area. That's that area of Canada, and from the Finger Lakes region north.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends, and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
That area that the glaciers gouged out, thousands of lakes, you know, all the way across the Great Lakes region. You know, Minnesota's got 10,000 lakes. So this theory that Kimura, you know, the Kimura was down in Yucatan, that can't be, because they started out down there, and that's when they built their temple. Then they moved north, and as they fought, they kept moving further and further north, and the last battle of the Book of Mormon was fought right up there in New York. The first governor of New York said that area around the Hill Cumorah, when the farmers first broke ground up there, it was remarkable about all the whites, you know, how white the soil was. Well, when you've got millions of skeletons that are allowed to bleach for 1,500 years, that's what you get. You know, for several miles around the Hill of Cumorah, which is what's described in the Book of Mormon, you have, you know, several million people fighting each other to the death, and a few of them escape. So it had to be New York.
When I read the Book of Mormon, all it was a history accounting of all these horrendous wars.
Yeah.
I mean, I kept looking for the wisdom, going, all this is the history accounting. I mean, like, there's like, it's like you're saying, there were these millions of people killed. Where are the bones? Where are the bones? That many bones don't disappear. They got to become part of the...
They bleach in the sun. Well, the real wisdom is the parallel to the Cherokee described the God of Wind and Waters. That's what we call them, King to Visit. But in the Book of Mormon, it said that they had been told that the Messiah would come. They were given about 700 years notice, and they said that when it happened, they would know because there'd be 3 days and nights of darkness. And when this happened in the Book of Mormon, the 3 days and nights, they called it the vapor of darkness. They said it was such a vapor of darkness. They said the first thing that happened was a great earthquake. And, of course, a parallel earthquake happened right before the crucifixion. But they said after that, everything went black. And for 3 days, you know, you couldn't light a fire. Well, when I was going to BYU, I heard about a geologist that when he read the Book of Mormon, he went, aha, well, there's some scientific proof, because people don't know that if you rend the earth deep enough that a gas escapes, that for several days it doesn't allow fire to burn. But anyway, after that 3 days was over, the people began, and all these cities and everything were destroyed down there, the people began to see this light coming in the sky. And as it got closer and closer, the people saw that it was in the shape of a man. And the man descended and, you know, called for the children to come around. But he came and established authority there and told people what they were supposed to be doing. And what he wanted them to do was with all things common, you know. And that's what they did in Jerusalem for about 50 years after the crucifixion. But they did it in the Americas for 166 years before they had the first hiccup. And then for two more generations.
First hiccup?
Yeah, they had a dispute. They literally described themselves as the happiest people that ever lived on the face of the earth, because they had everything, all things common. They shared everything. They had no private ownership of property. All assets, all food, everything was shared equally.
Like
Hopi. Well, yeah, and they said that they got so rich, though, that after about five generations, you know, some of them started dressing a little bit richer than the other ones and looking down on the other ones, and they had a little bit of a dispute, and then they handled that. But after two more generations, they went out to 266 years where they lived things all common. And so that's the wisdom of the Book of Mormon. It's about all things common. That's the way, basically the way that the Europeans found the indigenous people living over here. They had no concept of property, fences, private ownership, but where they erred,
call it a solid republic.
Right, where they erred was they had started warring against each other, and they were supposed to bury their weapons. Some among the Haudenosaunee did, and the Hopi did, but that's what Creator didn't want.
Back to the old stories of the that I remember grandmothers teaching me about how they were told to block the good red road, not the black road, and all the bundles were there, and the bundles were buried in various places. And these bundles, you know, not everybody's found them. There's a lot of stories about these. But when they buried these bundles, it began a time where they would fall into forgetfulness. Mm. And that it would bring about, which sort of goes into the Kanawidos, Kayanirikawi, the great peace prophecies about the dragons and all of that. But that's funny, that is Haudenosaunee's. All about dragons.
Mm-hmm.
But in this time, you know, the white dragon, the red dragon, the black dragon, which had nothing to do, absolutely nothing to do with race, absolutely nothing to do with race. That's the total misconception. But when we get into that and we understand that, we get into this very time that we're in now, where they talked about, and they talked about this 1,000 years ago. Isn't it amazing how, you know, they knew all this 1,000 years ago, and we're just discovering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get so tired of all these New Age people trying to rehash and regrind old things and bring it into new ways. It's like, why don't you, Washichu, listen to what the elders gave you and just do it?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you always have to spin things in your own direction? You know, it's
well, then they lose control.
Thousands of years old.
They lose control. They couldn't spin.
But they give it new names.
Oh, yeah.
And they change the story, and they make the buffalo calf woman look like, you know, some Hollywood starlet or something. You don't have to change it, because what you're forgetting is that you're living on the clock of illusion. And these prophecies, these teachings, which is what the what a prophecy is. It's not a psychic reading. A psychic reading, you can come to me. I don't do that. I go to psychic, because every once in a while I get lost. Okay. I go, wow, what's going on now?
By the way, the guy I go to is Gordon Banta. He was my guest a few weeks ago.
I got another one for you, too. She's good. And, well, like, you know, so she'll help me get back on track, but the psychic can only see, based on what's happening right now in this moment,
mm-hmm.
what the predictable outcome will be. Where the prophet is schooled in all the ancient knowledge, it's almost a science, and you're based on the overall outcome. It's a whole different thing. It's like if you asked me to give you a reading on something, I'd have to give you a reading as a prophet, and I couldn't tell you exactly how it would turn out, because it could depend upon what happened in that moment. I have been at ceremonies where we have turned around an earthquake. And here's the hypocrisy in their belief. We all get together, we all come and sing, we all come and bury the golden grail and all this other stuff, and we do all this stuff, and we say, this will not happen. This will be for the betterment of the people, this will be for the good of the people. And so we turn the event around. We actually turn the event around. It's like there's been some experiments on the radio where people have gotten together with collective consciousness, so I've heard, and they've actually stopped the drought. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But then we're told, well, we can't do this because the power that we're wielding is too dangerous. You just can't go out and do this and get together and do things. We're supposed to get together and do spiritual things for the common good. We're supposed to do things and get together and pray for the help of the healing of children and the healing of the wounds of the women. And the healing of the men who were lost. We're supposed to. That's called constructive, creative praying. And instead, you know, it's like this dark Christian myth, you know, that like, well, you're not supposed to do that. That's only the powers of God. And yet, people who come up to me who have gone to all the doctors, they're dying of cancer, and nothing's working, and they spent, you know, tens of thousands of dollars and all of these things that are broken. They were told that it's terminal and there's nowhere to go, and I go, well, what do you want to do? And they go, I'd like to have some more life. We both want to live. We both want to make up. They go, okay. And so I said, well, you know, you understand that what I do is considered Native American. You know, it's an indigenous type of ceremony. Now we can go talk about it, and we can see what can happen. And but you have to understand, it might not be to the context that you've been taught about your spiritual beliefs. I mean, suppose you're sitting here, and all of a sudden, you know, the buffalo guy comes in the middle of the lodge and starts dancing around and talking in a language you can't understand. You can say, devil, or you're going to take it to kill. And, you know, a lot of these people have come out of this healed.
Mm-hmm.
Totally, there's nothing there. They go to the doctor, nothing there. They live their lives like they were living before this nightmare ever happened. Before they ever adopted this thought that they had this illness, and that they had this affliction. So, what we're talking about is this thing is much older than anybody's particular political agendas. We're talking about a world, and when I've gone back to the ancient world, you've seen some of my stuff. I got documents that go all the way back. And it was one world, it was one people, and the understanding was the same. I mean, I remember so many times Grandpa saying to me, yeah, so they took me to this place in Egypt, and I was standing in front of the pyramid, and they show me this thing, and I'm looking down at the ground, and they say, this is ancient Egyptian symbol, this is what we used to use for the ceremony. You know, what do you think it is? And you'd look at it and go, that's the four directions sign.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing we do with the symbols.
Well, there was a delegation of Cherokees that went down a couple, 3 years ago, spoke to Don Enrique. And they said, well, you know, what's, you know, Don Enrique was a Mayan, and they said, well, you know, what are, you know, are we related to you? And he just looked and says, hey, you're the same people. And says, you don't believe me? He says, I'll tell you what city in Egypt to go to and prove it to yourself. Yeah.
Now, when you looked at my site, at the very end of my site, I have a couple of pictures, one's in black and white and one's in color. There's like a part one and part two, so it's when you go to part two, because it got so long that the internet wouldn't accept it. But what this is, and this is a very important thing, archaeologically speaking, this is a stone that was ripped off from my collections. You have to watch out, because everybody comes around and tries to steal what you have, because they think they're going to go out to Barn and Bailey and make all this money. This stone came from a cave in central Illinois.
Mm.
And it's a perfect depiction of a flying dragon.
Hmm. From Burroughs Cave.
Mm. Yeah.
Something like that.
And I had many of those pieces because I'm dealing with fragments of things. Plus, you know, that whole story is like a drama in itself. So all I have is these fragments of things. So I did what I did, which was like, okay, I can look at this. I can surmise this, or I can think this. I can listen to this story and that story. There's a thousand stories. Well, will somebody please tell me what the hell this dragon is? And the stones that came from there, all of them were forensically dated to be, and this is the only way they can say it legally, prior to 1800 BCE. BCE is new terminology. Instead of BC,
mm-hmm.
BCE means before the Christian era.
Right.
Unofficially, this thing could be as old as 10,000 years old. And this is this giant flying serpent. Now, the thing is different from this, from what we usually see with the Thunderbirds, what we usually see with the Thunderbirds are like Fuzzy Cloudless, you know, Northropy, Pterodactyl type things, or Pterotrons, which are these huge flying birds, or condors that are basically three times normal size. Is that this creature looks very much like what I would call in paleontology a plesiosaur. A plesiosaur is a sea dragon. A plesiosaur by myth is what the Loch Ness Monster is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because here's this actual reptile with this very long neck, this Brontosaurus type neck, with an obvious lizard, reptile, dinosaur head, but these huge wings. And this thing, if it's at least 1800 BCE, based on all the rest, it was found in the same place, and everything else tested out the same way. Well, we're talking about a 4,000 or better year old depiction of a Thunderbird.
Mm-hmm.
Or a flying dragon. And this was found in the Americas. It was found in Illinois. Now, it's not the only one that I have, but it's like, you know, I can go on to this whole thing and put this list forever of all these different petroglyphs and carvings that I found. I found other ones that have depictions of these giant lizards with horns on their heads. I found depictions of giant lizards that are human-like in form. So were they the reptilians that we talk about?
Mm-hmm.
Maki? I don't know. I don't know, because we've yet to come to a place in this country where we can bring all these things safely and have them properly analyzed.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of evidence that is out there, you know, I mean, I live here in New Mexico, and right over here, not far from me, there's a place called the Three Rivers area. It's down by Roswell. It's in what they call the Tularosa Basin.
Mm-hmm.
And there are thousands of petroglyphs that defy explanation. Again, when you understand that the petroglyphs were the ancient peoples documented their history, where they came from, it was their way of documenting it. And what we have found in the last 20 years is that, in fact, there was a language.
Let the wind blow. Let the truth.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The Trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for and the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
To all mankind again, Prophecy Keeper, oh yeah.
Not only was there a language, there were many languages that came from all over the globe.
Mm-hmm.
And the same circumstance has been found on six continents. So, if I go into what the Mayans taught me, the Mayans taught me about an ancient world that was very close to Egypt. They totally understood the war between Osiris and his brother, and the coming of Isis, and the birth of Horus, the falcon-headed god, which you find all over the place. I've got two artifacts here in my home that are of this hawk or falcon-headed god. And they came from the Americas. They didn't come from Burroughs Cave. What I'm trying to find is what happened before we lost our memory.
Mm-hmm.
What happened when this place was one? When the people from all over this world spoke about the same thing. Is this truly what the Hopi spoke about when they said the original teachings of Massah?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, what are the original teachings, you know? Where did they come from? How come they're all, oh my goodness, they're from all over the world. They're not just one place. You know, besides the Hopi, the oldest memory, continued memory of this ancient knowledge in the Americas, in North America, comes from Cherokee. In South America, it's sort of a cross between Inca and Mayan. Mayans seem to have it academically more together. They can tell it in a linear way. I think the Inca just went through too much destruction.
Mm-hmm.
And the Inca were a much gentler people. You know, the Mayans went through a lot of changes. They went through, you know, in the Toltec influence, as we understand it, they went through a lot of blood ritual and things like that. The Quetzalcoatl comes along and he teaches them a different way. You know, there really is no difference between Quetzalcoatl and the Pale Prophet,
mm-hmm.
and Jesus the Christ, and Sananda. It's the same teaching. It's absolutely the same teaching.
Yeah.
It always amazes me when I talk to the Tua, if it's the will. Because whenever I go to a new place and I meet some people, like when I was up in a certain place in the Northwest, and I said, what is your name for God? Who is the creator? This particular group of people didn't have one. Well, I remember when I asked that at the Kadua in North Carolina, I said, what is the name of your God? And they said, Yah, Yehovah.
Yahweh.
You know, and when you listen to the old chants, when you listen to the old, not the new tapes that are all done in Hollywood style, But when you listen to the old guys who used to sit together on the tapes, you know, back when we were kids, we were trying to learn this stuff, trying to understand this stuff. Well, you know, they always went into this chant here that always went, Yahweh, Yahweh, hey Yahweh, hey Yahweh, hey Yahweh, hey Yahweh, hey Yahweh, Yahweh, hey Yahweh, Yahweh.
Mm-hmm. Did hey Yah, I mean hey Yah, Yahweh, the same thing because in the...
Well, you know, when we go into that...
In the Old Testament, there was two names.
The Egyptian god in the early dynasties was Yahweh.
That's right.
Before Jehovah.
Yeah, in the Old Testament, there was...
This god was a benevolent god. This god was a lover.
That's right. There was two names that were allowed. The Yahweh, YHWH, was only to be used by the priests one time a year, but the Heyah, which is Eheyah, was to be used by just the average Joe to invoke the name of God. And, you know, then you go over to Black Elk Speaks, and where Black looks, you know, intoning Heyah, 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 and translates to, that's an invocation of Great Spirit. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out they're talking about the same God.
You know, and the oldest word that I ever heard from any of the indigenous elders, and I was very fortunate. I spent a whole portion of my life, you know, because you get some sort of academic credit for what I did all those years being out there as a pilgrim. The oldest word I ever heard, and I heard it in Canada, I heard it in Alaska, and I heard it from Shoshone, Southern California, Nevada area. And the word was E-A-O. And, you know, that's sung in ancient chants, and you can hear that in some of the Aboriginal Australian chanting. E-A-O.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how they would invoke the spirit of the Creator.
Mm-hmm.
The spirit of... You know, we all have different... I mean, there's 11,000 religions in the world. They all claim to have the only way. And they're all talking about the same thing. And that's mm-hmm. only the ones that are sanctified. Now, if we go into Christianity, well, Christianity is more diversified than the U.S. government. I mean, there are more sects, you know, different departments within Christianity than any religion I ever saw in the world. You know, from guys who do dances with snakes to you know, I mean, talk about occult practices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I go into the ancient things that were indigenous to the Americas, they all come back to the same kind of beat. They all come back to the same teachings. They have different ways, different beings brought these, and because of the destruction during the devastation, during the times of conquest, it's very hard to pull these things together. Most of the only articulate translations that we have are in Spanish, okay? Spanish is okay, it does certain things, but you can't express the way a Yaqui talks about the Creator in Spanish the way a Yaqui would a Yaqui.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's number one, it's a noun-based language versus a verb-based language. So, it, you know, we lost a lot of pieces and we're looking at a jigsaw.
Oh, yeah.
But the thing that always amazed me was, I don't care if you go to Canada, I don't care if you go to Alaska, I don't care if you go to Bolivia, I don't care if you go to Peru, to Chile, to the Yucatan. The stories that I've heard from the elders are the same stories I've heard from Bible only with definition.
Mm-hmm.
Understand? I mean, like, a lot of the things I read in the book, well, there was no explanation, there was no connection, there was no, it didn't connect to this, it didn't connect to that, it was like, just the story, and then we went on to the next page. And this is where, you know, Rachel had sex with the guy with the camel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but there was no connection. Everything that I've ever heard the elders tell me, from the Mayans to the Inca to the Athabasca to the Haudenosaunee to the Cherokees, there's always this linear connection.
Yeah.
I have some papers that I would love to send to you if you can bear going through them. And what they are is several years ago, around the time of the Great Rainbow Walk.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that?
Matter of fact, I don't.
That's where the Hopi brought the plates, tablets, up to the house.
Oh, yeah. To show that they had
all over
title to the state.
All, you know, indigenous people. But this is where, like, when I do the prophecies of the 800s, that's where that came from. This was in the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Where they talked about, well, you know, what was going to come down. Of course, then it was really far out. Now I'm watching it on CNN.
Mm-hmm.
But in these stories, you know, I have the tapes of the ceremony that the Haudenosaunee do every year. There's like 14 tapes. Got to get to all the grandfathers doing all this stuff and going on the sidetracks. But these are all the stories, the oral tradition from 1,500 years. But every year they go and they tell the stories. And you can't get it until you listen to the whole thing.
Well, the recitation of the Long Bell takes what day, right?
Right. And I did, and I was granted the right to tape them because I do, looking at these elders, that my God, one day they're not going to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And who can we rely on to keep the record? Because this is a different kind of a time. This is a time where the ties to yesterday are going to be broken. And so, you know, what are we going to come up with in the future? Who's going to give something to the young people?
Well, Chief William Smith, kind of literally.
This is what they talked about. This is what they did, you know. All we have is these words, these superlatives about things they did, but there's no record of what they did.
Yeah. And
they let me record it, okay? They wouldn't let me write them down, but they let me record them. But there's about 14 tapes.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, Chief William Smith.
It is one of these ceremonies that, you know, outsiders don't come to.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just these elders talking the history. It's Haudenosaunee. It's, you know, which is Iroquois. It's the Six Nations, which is really five nations. Seneca was the last. It's
mm-hmm.
But it is that whole ceremony, and all I do is talk. And you're up all the time. Because you don't go to sleep, Grandpa's talking.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to, I will send those to
you. Oh, that'd be great. Well, you know, in 1984, Chief William Smith of the original Kootenai Society had to fight the council to get the word out about, you know, where the origins were. And then now that videotape can be seen at kootenai-society.org. There's a link to it from prophecykeepers.com. But, you know, he's lucky he could break the tie because it was deadlocked in council, and traditionally chiefs break ties. They don't vote unless it's a break a tie. But he had to break a tie to get through the old tradition, which was we don't allow people to come in and photograph any part of any ceremony. But there was also, they were told that when the right person showed up that had blue veins in his face, that and if he asked in a good way, that they were to let him tell the world about the Wampum Belts and who they were. And they did. And then you got this cover-up going on. there's a strange split in the Kootenai Society. It's split into several factions,
I know those of us from North Carolina are concerned about that.
Well, one of the chiefs, George Stopp, is chief over at the Long Valley grounds, the Chewy, and you know, he's claiming that you know, he's claiming certain things, but But see, the thing about it is he's also an employee of the Cherokee Nation and a linguist. But, and he's saying certain things, but unless people understand that the Cthulhu Society broke up into factions, and they broke up over the issue of in the 1890s when...